You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we're in Alto de Angliru.
Where are we, Fran?
We are close to a trash bin in midway through the climb of the Angliru, where the bus that was taking us to the finish line was stopped by the Spanish police, who decided it was not going to make it up to the Angliru.
Yeah, well, we were told we couldn't drive up in our own cars because the road is very steep, very narrow. There's not much parking space at the top. They've laid on minibuses for the media to go up to the top. And we're probably 8 kilometres from the summit here, aren't we? Yeah. And we've been stopped for maybe half an hour. It's currently 2 p.m. So the race will reach the top at around 5:30, something like that. But we have an hour and a half walk if we want to go up to the top. There's been an accident on the climb as well, so that may have a bearing because the air ambulance had to be called. A cyclist has been injured, so you know we shouldn't grumble too much. The safety of people is the biggest priority, and they've obviously decided with the number of people who are up there, the minibuses are not going to get through. And of course, if the minibuses were to get stuck on a steep part, there would be no alternative. The race would have to stop. I mean, it could jeopardize the race. So probably the right decision.
Exactly. Right call. The right call, definitely, for sure, because these minibuses are not going to make it through all the crowds and the steep gradients.
I think they probably should have made that decision half an hour ago to give us a bit more time, but I think we should go for it, Fran. An hour and a half walk up to the top, are you up for that?
I am up for that, and I have to inform you that I bought today bananas and biscuits, so we have enough food as to make it all the way.
Well, we've got some colleagues here as well, so their morale will probably dip at some point, but at least they'll have the kilometres to go banners as we go up the mountain. I've got to say, it's very windy as well. A headwind, I don't know how that affects walking, but it's going to have a bearing, isn't it?
And for sure, as for the race, it's going to affect it deeply because no sane rider will attack before 7 kilometres to go, where the road changes a bit and the valley gets a bit more narrow, so wind won't blow. Do you remember that earlier on I was telling you that in this valley, usually wind doesn't blow? Okay, I was completely mistaken. And it does indeed. And as they told me, if there is a single point of Asturias where wind is blowing, then wind is blowing also here too.
Well, we should better get on with it. Our colleagues are starting to walk up. Who knows what this podcast will be like now? I mean, my morale may well not be in a very good shape when we reach the top. I'm not feeling my fittest, I have to say. It's been a long Grand Tour season. I hadn't banked on walking up the Angliru today. I hadn't planned that. But these are the circumstances we've been dealt. I suppose we'd better get on with it.
Nobody said this was going to be easy, that Lionel. So let's go.
Well, I walked about a kilometre and a half, left Fran Reyes behind. He was dawdling a bit, I have to say. He's being very complacent about it, I think. I thought, I'm going to start marching on, at least get the first couple of kilometres done. But I've managed to blag my way into the back of a van, so I'm hidden from view. I've just passed Matt Dickinson, Tom Carey, who write for the Times and the Telegraph, so I'll delight in telling them that I managed to get a lift to the top a bit later on. Arguably, I could do with the exercise more than those guys. They're pretty fit at the moment. But I thought I saw an opportunity to get into the back of the van, and I took it. Fran will just have to make his own way to the top. If he has to walk all the way, I'm sure he's up to it. Young man, he's got a good, well, probably 12 or 13 years on me. But I'm afraid I did a Warren Barguil. I looked back, I pretended I couldn't see him. Hashtag no waiting.
Amargo el recuerdo, ahora que amanezco solo, viéndome en suspiros.
deep breaths all round. Our driver is threading this van through like a piece of thread through the eye of a needle. But we have made it. We have made it without stalling, without toppling off the edge. I hope Fran is okay. While I've tweeted about my adventures this afternoon, I'm already seeing comments saying that I should be sent home like Warren Barguil for refusing to wait for Fran. But Fran's not the team leader. In the absence of the Buffalo, Richard Moore, I'm the team leader. So, I've managed to use my initiative and get into a van. And Fran will just have to, well, he'll have to come in with the gruppetto or do the same. Fran, my friend, I was genuinely very worried about you, but you were in the very next vehicle, an open-sided truck.
Yeah, we were in this pickup, this pickup thing of the Protección Civil, which is kind of a voluntary corps for social security here in Spain. And up until now, I always considered them useless, but now I reckon what they are worth, exciting.
We made it. It's rainy and cold up here. I'm really glad we didn't have to walk the whole 8 kilometres. But I dropped you so easily. What happened?
Well, I was working for Eva Tomé from Eurosport. She was sick and I am too loyal.
I see. Well, I did the Warren Barguil. I went on and I looked back and I just kept going.
Yeah, luckily I am so Sam Omen right now today.
Well, our third amigo, Daniel, has just turned up in his car. He's driven up.
Yeah, it smells quite burnt, yeah.
The clutch smells like it's on its last legs. So let's go and get indoors somewhere or in this tent.
Yeah, tents here.
Alberto Contador en el día de hoy, que va a conseguir la victoria de etapa, pero con ese margen mínimo. Atención que tenemos que dejar sitio. Atención.
Well, Fran, here we are at the top of the Angliru. It's been horrible up here all afternoon. It's been very, very cold. It's rained. The cloud has been extremely low. Maybe an hour ago, visibility was only 10 or 20 meters. But the cloud has lifted. For a little while, the sun came out. It's almost as if the sun here in the Asturias mountains want to welcome Alberto Contador for the big final victory. The victory that was scripted, and we knew it was scripted, and yet pulling it off is something quite different, isn't it?
Sorry, what?
pulling off this victory is quite different, difficult, even though it was expected.
It was very hard to do this, you know, because everyone was expecting some attack from Alberto Contador, and he made his offensive probably at the exact place where it was more difficult for it to succeed, which is the very tricky descent of El Cordal. And he managed to break away. He managed to even have some help from his teammate Harrison Pantano and from two of the young guns that are going to replace him in the heart of the Spanish fandom, Marc Soule and Enric Mas, and pull it off in an impressive manner. Happy ending, not a fairy tale because he made it to the podium, but happy ending, yes.
A very happy ending. We've just seen Chris Froome and Wout Poels of Team Sky come past. I think it was 19 seconds there. And now we wait for Ilnur Zakarin. And
Ilnur Zakarin, 35 seconds. Let's see if he manages to take Wilco Kelderman's place in the podium. I think he's going to manage. He's going to manage. Because here come Nibali Palizzotti with Steven Kraszwijk. 51 seconds gap to Alberto Contador, 16. To Zakarin, and yeah, Kelderman did blow in the last 2 kilometers of the Angliru and is off the podium in favor of the Russian rider. Here comes Kelderman, Sunweb rider, 1 minute 10 to Contador.
So there we are. Kelderman has missed out on that podium place he's had for most of the week since the time trial. But the race today is all about Alberto Contador and Chris Froome. We'll go and talk to some riders and then we'll recap the day and talk about what this all means.
Okay, great.
Phew, Well, the dust has settled, Fran. Still very cold up here on the Angliru. I don't expect any of the listeners to feel too sorry for us. We've had some lovely weather this week, but today has been a real shock. It must have been a shock for the riders too, because, well, they're all having to ride down, aren't they? They're wrapped up like it's they're going for a winter training ride. They're going to roll down the Angliru. I always think it's crazy, this. You know, there's going to be traffic, pedestrian, you know, spectators walking down. There'll be all the fans who came up on bikes. Mm-hmm. But so hope everyone gets down safely. But phew, now we can reflect on the day. What a stage it's been. I mean, I tried to capture Alberto Contador coming over the line there and what that means. But now you've had half an hour to think about it. You know, what does it mean for Spanish cycling? And you made the point about the baton being passed almost on the road from Contador to maybe Enrique Mas or maybe Marc Soler, who were both riding with him. But it wasn't quite vintage Contador, was it? But it was certainly very clever Contador, because he used up all of the riders in that group as much as he could, and then went on his own.
Well, it's definitely a great time to be alive. It's a great time to be alive, and it's a great time to be a Spanish cycling reporter, because we have been fearing that after Contador, Valverde, Purito, Freire, Samuel Sanchez, and so on, there was no one coming. You know, no one that could effectively be a contender in any major race, and today proved the opposite. It was great to see Enrique Mas and Marc Soler working with Alberto Contador today, because they proved their quality and they proved their strength. Marc Soler, I think he needs no introduction after winning the Tour de l'Avenir, after what he's done in this season so far. He nearly won a stage in Paris-Nice, was third in Volta Catalunya, 10th in the Tour de Suisse, top 10 in the Tour de Suisse, which was an impressive performance, and yet he managed to do a third peak in his season in order to contend in this Vuelta a España, made it to six or seven breakaways during these 3 weeks, even this final one. He was the last one to hold the wheel of Alberto Contador until completely blowing with 6 kilometers to go. And as for Enrique Mas, we introduced him in the first week. He rode for the Alberto Contador team for 3 years, two as a junior, or no, for 2 years, one as a junior, one as an under 23. I have been doing these interviews, conducting these interviews with young Spanish riders for Ciclismo a Fondo for 3 years, on which there is a test on which they have to choose between two riders or two things. One of the questions was Valverde or Contador. In these 3 years, the only rider that has chosen Contador has been Enrique Mas. He deeply admires him. And I can feel the goosebumps he's had when pulling for Alberto Contador. Even if he's not his teammate, he's way more than that. He's his idol. And helping him in the very latest heyday of his career must have been amazing.
Well, I mean, it was Contador at his most swashbuckling, attacking right at the bottom, having Hulinson and Pantano. As we were watching it, I was talking to Daniel Freeb, and just we were saying maybe Pantano hasn't got an awful lot left. Maybe Pantano has to do the work in the early stages of the climb, and that kind of forced Contador to make that move as early as he did. But it was the sign-off that the Spanish fans will have wanted. I do have to just, you know, mention, I mean, Contador's Grand Tour career, he's finished fourth, he's climbed up into fourth place in this race, which means that every time he's been on the podium in a Grand Tour, it's always been in first place. He's never finished second or third. So, yeah, he's bowing out, not quite on the podium, but he's got the stage win on the iconic mountain of this year's Vuelta. And, you know, he's done it in a way that reminds us of his pre-doping ban days. And, you know, people do ask us, you know, why is Contador celebrated and cheered and everyone gets very excited about him? Whereas other riders who've served a doping ban are, you know, not looked upon quite so favourably. I don't know why that is. I mean, I think probably for a lot of people, it's purely his riding style. I mean, he is exciting. He makes the race happen. Chris Froome's made the point all through this last week that Contador is the biggest thorn in his side, even if he's not the closest on GC. He's the man who will always turn the screw and try and make it difficult. And, you know, it could have... Well, it didn't really tease anybody else out in terms of the GC battle today, because it was so early. No one was going to risk anything 12.5 kilometers from the finish of such a difficult climb.
Such a difficult descent, because the Alto del Cordal is one of the trickiest descents of Spain. You know, every time it's passed in the Tour of Asturias or in the Vuelta a España, it causes victims. You know, there are casualties always down in the Cordal. And it has so courageous to attack down the Alto del Cordal like he did today.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned that. We should do a little summary of what else happened out on the road today. There was a really powerful breakaway, wasn't there? And as they were approaching the final climbs, it was, well, Roman Bardet was in there. Both of the Yates brothers are in there, Adam and Simon. Thomas Marcinski, two-time stage winner here for Lotto Soudal. Henrik Mass, of course. Søren Krag Andersen of Team Sunweb was in there. Mark Soler was in there as well. He crashed on that descent. Is that right? Yeah, he was the guy who slid right out really dramatically, wasn't he? Vincenzo Nibali kind of went very wide and had to unclip his foot at one point. David Dela Cruz, we heard, had a problem on the descent as well. We need to insert a stop press here, because as we were descending the mountain after the stage, we received the official results and confirmation that Carlos Dela Cruz, who had been lying 11th overall this morning, was forced to abandon the race after crashing on the descent of the Cordal. So it was a day that wasn't one for the faint-hearted. As they were starting the Angliru, Marcinski was ahead of Bardet and the rest of the riders from that group. What surprised me, though, Fran, was behind Contador, the GC riders rode up in a mini peloton, didn't they? And it didn't split up. Often when we see the Angliru, it's in ones and twos from kind of the halfway mark, 6 kilometres or so from that really, really steep bit. But nobody really made a move today. What did you make of that?
Well, I think they were probably all of them were kind of expecting each other's move. The only real fight that there was there was between Zakarin and Kelderman. And both Zakarin and Kelderman hold their cards close to their chest until, with 4 kilometers to go, Zakarin had made his first attack, then the second, then the third, until finally Kelderman eventually blew, cracked, and lost the third spot of the podium in favor of the Russian rider Katush Alpessin, from which we can hear later on an amazing story.
Well, why don't we hear that now? Because Zakarin has clinched third place behind Chris Froome, of course, and Vincenzo Nibali. He overtook Kelderman, who unfortunately has slipped to fifth because Contador, of course, has climbed above him as well. But Ilnur Zakarin, he's been kind of fairly quiet in this race. He's just moved up a couple of places, and then suddenly in this last week he's had this chance to move into the podium position, and he's done it.
Zakarin has been discreet all over this race, but it has been something that has been carefully planned by the team Katusha staff. They know that that he is quite an exuberant rider in terms of attacking. He likes to have a goal whenever he can, but if he wants to be an effective contender for the GC of Grand Tours and 1 week tours in the World Tour, he needs to be more conservative at times and only actually attack when the final is close, you know, when they are approaching the decisive moments of the race. And so
I'm just pausing here, Fran, because the rain is coming in again. It's hammering on the top of this tent. They're going to start taking this tent down around us. So,
yeah.
But Zakarin's style. Tell me what. It's his sports director, right?
Yeah, that's what Jose Acevedo told me, that they are trying to reshape the way he races to make him get some more racecraft, you know, and more of an intelligent racer rather than an impulsive one, and he effectively did it in this Vuelta.
Well, he made that little move, didn't he, on the Angliru, and Kelderman reacted, and then maybe that was what softened Kelderman up for later on, when, you know, because Zakarin was right up with much closer to Chris Froome, and Kelderman was going backwards. So maybe that's what Acevedo is talking about, putting a little move, not necessarily to break Kelderman now, but possibly break Kelderman later on in the climb. But shall we hear from Zakarin? Because as you said, Fran, it's been a traumatic year for him in a personal sense.
Exactly, and you will hear, this is the kind of usual strange Zakarin interview with a couple of different translators intervening and helping me understand what Zakarin wants to say and helping Zakarin explain himself. Let's hear it, because I guess it pretty much explains itself. How do you feel?
I feel good. I did my best today. I will try going in podium, and это получилось как будет.
Yeah, trying what he would to try as much as possible. Eh?
Yeah.
But finally, to get the podium after so many tries in Grand Tour, you finally made it to the finish and made it to the podium. That has to feel great.
Ну, я очень рад этому, и в следующий раз уже больше цели, и будем в следующий раз больше стараться.
Very happy, and my next goal will be even higher.
Oh, great. Yeah. What has been the key for this success, for making it to the podium? The most important thing.
Ну, у меня, скажите сейчас, у меня было большое желание посвятить этот подиум моему отцу и маме моей жены, знаете, что случилось с ними. И я хотел, было огромное желание в течение года это сделать, и наконец сегодня это получилось, и я посвящаю им победу, и очень рад этому.
Last year his father dead, and this year Ильнур tried to win for father. He just like it was big dream to
honor him,
to remember the father and
his
this
father.
Six
yeah died
last
yeah,
year
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Now he tried to win for the father.
Uh-huh, great.
Yeah, и мам матери
and also mother because also
жены маме матери жены.
Ah, because the mother-in-law also.
Yeah, 6 months ago, not last.
Yeah. Six months ago, also dead, and this big, big tragedy in the family, and now it's like
that's amazing, man.
Yeah,
that's amazing. So, just one last question to check my facts. I understood. I think that you were a guy that suffered with cold and rain and so on. Is that true, or it is something that is not true?
Хорошо ли я себя чувствую в дождь?
Когда холодно, когда...
You prefer weather, hot conditions?
I don't like rain, weather, cold, but all result, best result in my result in rain and cold weather.
Yeah, that's what being Russian is, you know? So that was Sakharin. He lost both his parents in a one-year span, and he made it to the Vuelta podium. He's a successful lad. This is really meaningful to him. And believe me, I have interviewed Sakharin a lot of times. I am indeed some kind of Sakharinologist because I feel really identified with so many things in his life and his background. And this has been the closest I've ever seen him to actually breaking down in tears, because he's Russian, and as a Russian, he can't really show his emotions as Occidental people do. But his skin was really soft at this point of the conversation, at this point of his life. After all, we are talking about a whole life fighting to become a cyclist first, which is a whole thing in being Russian. And second, making it to the top, to the elite of the sport, being able to make himself a name on the UCI World Tour level, and then actually climbing up to the world, to a World Tour podium. It is an amazing journey, and this has been quite an impressive feat. And for the next years, he wants higher goals. Jose Acevedo refused to put a name of those to those goals because they want to see the roots and so on before deciding if he will go to the Tour, the Giro, or the Vuelta. Yet I feel we will see him contending in July.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits, and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Very grateful for our Rafa jackets again.
They work perfectly.
Yeah, it's very cold up here, so definitely needed them today. The overall battle then is done. The final stage in Madrid is very much like the final stage of the Tour de France, in that it will be a ceremony in the evening, isn't it? It's quite late on in the day, so the sun will be thinking about starting to set, maybe, or people will certainly be out for their evening walk, won't they, once the race has finished. But Chris Froome has won overall, and he has added it to his 4 Tour de France titles, and he's become the first rider to do the Vuelta Tour de France double since the Vuelta moved to its late summer spot. Of course, Jacques Anquetil and Bernardino did it way back when the Vuelta was held in the springtime. And a lot has been made of how strong Chris Froome has been, but it's the strength of his team, really, that has looked after him at the moments when he's not looked so good. Today, Froome never looked really in any difficulty. He had a very good margin over Vincenzo Nibali, and in fact has extended that lead. But Wout Poels today was, he was the star of the show, wasn't he? Second on the Angliru again, just as he was in 2011.
Second and third.
Yeah.
Third was Denis Menchov was third on the Angliru in 2011, wasn't he? I think it was Denis Menchov in the middle of Poels and Froome. Sorry for interrupting, Lionel. I wanted to be
I'm not sure about that. Paul says he was second. So was Menchov...
Poels second, Menchov third, Froome fourth.
Oh, I see. Yes, got you. I understand right. Yes. Well, Paul certainly second in 2011 and second again today. Looked very, very good. He looked probably more impressive than Froome did on the very steep sections, that's for sure. But Froome is... he's got the red jersey. He's going to win the race. He's also got the green jersey, and I think Trentin would have to win the intermediate sprint and win the stage in Madrid tomorrow to take that. David Villela has won the King of the Mountains for Cannondale. Cannondale have got a new sponsor, Education First, which is basically language schools, isn't it? So people can all learn different languages, you know, wherever they may be in Europe and the world. So it's a very different partner to the one that we think was lined up to sponsor the Cannondale Drapac team, take over as title sponsorship. But Chris Froome, it's been a masterful victory for him. I mean, he's been in control ever since Andorra, never looked like being unsettled, even if he did falter a little bit in Wednesday's very steep stage to Los Machucos. What have you made of his performance?
Well, he has been dominant, plain and simple. I mean, he made one of his best races ever in terms not only of physical performance, but also of being able to control every situation and to really use effectively the support of his team. I mean, because so many times we have seen the Team Sky controlling the bunch, you know, driving the bunch and keeping a high pace so everyone was close to the red. In this case, I think we haven't seen that much of it, as much as of effective controlling, of use of shooting when it was necessary, and using all of its elements in different moments of the race. Even Diego Rosa, a guy who, you know, in my opinion, has kind of underperformed in the mountains, has been useful for the team because they have used him in different times of the race. And also with Mikel Nieve, Gianni Moscon, Wout Poels, and even David Lopez today, all of them have been effective helpers in the mountain, and all of them have had easy days in order to be strong in the following ones. So I think they have managed, Team Sky and Chris Froome have managed their resources great.
I said very early in the race, in my first stint, that they were riding it like the Tour de France, and nothing that's happened since the first week has changed my opinion on that. You're absolutely right. The riders step up on different days. It's not that they're not going well necessarily. I think it's the case that they rest a little bit and they come to the fore. I mean, we've barely seen David Lopez really, and yet today he comes in and does a really important turn at an important time on the climb. And they've become expert at managing the resources, using riders to the best of their ability, and saving the legs of people. I mean, Wout Poels has had some dodgy days. That may be because he's come better as the race has gone on, because he's still on the way back from troubles he's had with a knee injury. And yet, you know, Nieve, you know, he's ridden the way we know Mikel Nieve can ride, and obviously he's signing off, moving on to Orica Scott next year. Quite a nice way to sign off. They'll miss him, no doubt. They'll have somebody in mind to replace him. But it's been a Tour de France style victory for Froome and Team Sky, and really no one else has been able to. They can't match that in terms of resources. I mean, yeah, Vincenzo Nibali has really only had Franco Pellizzotti working for him. And Pellizzotti, 39 years of age. I mean, riding as strongly as he's riding. But the roster on the Bahrain Merida team has not been strong enough to match Team Sky. And so everybody is really in their shadows. You look at their roster, Bahrain Merida, and it's not like there's riders underperforming. That's the strength of the riders they have, whereas Team Sky have riders who have a pedigree of having achieved these kind of performances in the past.
Yeah, it's hard to put together a competitive team in the very first season of existence of a team. I understand that Bahrain Merida has still a long path to walk before actually becoming a powerful Grand Tour team, and they probably will become a Grand Tour team after Nibali retires, you know, or after Nibali finally gives up in his Grand Tour hopes. Still, I think that it has been a pretty remarkable performance by Nibali, pretty wise. He has taken every chance that he's had to gain time, and he has limited his losses in pretty nice way. So I think he's a deserving second spot the podium.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. I should have mentioned in the previous section, actually, I finally managed to present Stefan Denifil of Aqua Blue with his Pedaleur de Charme T-shirt, which he won for such a charming reaction to winning the stage the other day. He was delighted. He wanted to. He was covered in, you know, mud basically. His face was all black. His arms and hands were all dirty. So he was being very careful not to get any mucky fingerprints on his T-shirt. But very happy he was too. Let's just wrap up here from the Angliru and hopefully get off the mountain in good time by just talking through a few of the other riders who've moved up and down in the top 10. We mentioned that Kelderman has slipped off the podium down to fifth. Wout Poels has climbed up to sixth. I actually spoke to Michael Woods at the finish, the Cannondale Drapac rider. So we'll hear from him now. Michael, that looked like one of the epic days, and it looks like you've moved up a place to sixth, I think.
Did I? I'm not sure.
Well, Miguel Angel Lopez was behind, so I think
Powell's move jumped me, I think.
Only 30-odd seconds. I'd have to have a look. But either way, I mean, you've cemented a very good position in the top 10 with another great ride.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it, but at the same time, a bit disappointed. De La Cruz opened a huge gap in the descent on the first descent, and it cost me big time because I got caught behind him along with Zachary, and we had to go really hard on the second last climb in order to catch back the group, and that kind of killed my legs for the rest of the day. I was just dangling the rest of the climb, unfortunately. I was really hoping I could be more of a factor in that final, but just with that, having to make up that gap, it's kind of disappointing. But, you know, managed to solidify a top 10 in Grand Tour, which I think I'm the first Canadian to do that in the Vuelta, and that's pretty special. And pretty happy on that front.
And your cough shows just what a toll it takes climbing in cold conditions like that. I mean, what was the Angliru like?
It was brutal, you know. I tried to keep it in a tempo that I could maintain, but there were just some grades, even with a compact on, they were just so hard that they put you over the red line. And it doesn't matter, like, once you go over that red line, there's no coming back. And the last kilometers, I just suffered.
And lastly, the team's announced a new sponsor for next year. There's been a lot of uncertainty around the team. Are you able to say what your plans are for 2018?
Not yet. Great news on the team front, and we're everybody here at Cannondale Drapac super excited. I mean, this is something I really really wanted, and this team's an amazing team. We may have a smaller budget than a lot of other teams, but we're a real family. And the way that the team rides, we ride with so much heart, and we've got such great sponsors. You know, like it's just a special team. JV has put together not just some good athletes, but like just some interesting characters. And so the atmosphere in the group is second to none, and we just have so much fun. So for that presence to be gone from the peloton would be a shame. And I'm really excited that's going to be around in 2018.
So an impressive top 10 for Michael Woods. He said there that he's the first Canadian to finish in the top 10 at the Vuelta. I have no reason to doubt that fact. As you heard there, I wasn't too sure whether, because he jumped above Miguel Angel Lopez Moreno of Astana, I thought he maybe would have climbed up to sixth place, Woods, but of course, Poles was up the road. It just showed, really, because I was talking to him within sort of 2 minutes of crossing the line. I was trying to follow it, you know, keeping up with the results, time gaps and what have you. The riders themselves have got a pretty good idea exactly what they need to do. And, you know, he clearly knew better than I did that he actually hadn't gone up a place. I do want to correct something I said the other day about Stephen Kreiswick of Team Lotto NL Jumbo having been fairly anonymous in this race. Well, he's ridden his way into the top 10. In these final few days, up to nine.
In an anonymous way. I mean, but today he launched an attack that was very courageous, and I think he deserves some credit for that. It was before the bunch for 5-7 kilometers in the Angliru, and was only caught and overtaken by Team Sky, Wout Poels, and Chris Froome, and maybe Zachary and Kelderman, but... Yeah, it's still a very good climb to the Angler.
It was, and you know, he's finished in the racing style, as is TJ Van Garderen, who's climbed up three places, I think, to the top 10. Fabio Aru has slipped. He had a pretty bad day today. It's been a tough old race for Aru.
Yeah, what you should have seen his face when he crossed the finish line. He was completely destroyed. He was exhausted, you know. All the energy that he spent the other day on his pride attack of the stage 18, he probably missed them today. But, well, that's also what pride and charisma is about.
Yeah, I did actually see him, and, I mean, he looked shell-shocked, really. He looked like it had taken absolutely everything he had and was asking for more, and he'll be very relieved. It's been a tough season for him because, of course, the whole point of his season was going to be the Giro d'Italia, which started on his home island, and he crashed in training and was unable to start. And then, being the leader of Astana, the pressure's on then to go to the Tour de France, which would not have been part of his plan. And obviously he had a very good tour. You know, he led very briefly. He looked like he would be the biggest challenger to Chris Froome there, but this has been a race too long for him because... You know, it's not just about having raced the Tour and then having raced the Vuelta, but he was in Grand Tour winning form, you would think, way back at the start of May. So although he'd crashed and was injured, you know, he's still done all of that training load to prepare for the Giro. It's not like you can just kind of turn that off and, take that form and put it on the kitchen worktop and leave it and then put it back again for the Tour de France. You know, he's probably been race fit for many months now, and it looks like he's certainly due a break.
So his season has a lot of merit because he has suffered so many setbacks, and still he has crawled back from them on to be a top rider. And also this Vuelta must have felt very difficult, because when a rider is moving teams, especially a star rider that the team wanted to retain yet couldn't, there is some sense of hostility from the team staff towards the rider, you know, and any fact tend to be misinterpreted by all the relevant parts, and that's hard to overcome psychologically. So these 3 weeks must have been kind of a struggle, even more with the rising star of Miguel Angel Lopez taking so much attention off from him, who was the prima donna of the team for so many years.
Well, you say that, Fran. It's been a very long Grand Tour season for all of us on the Cycling Podcast. I've done 2 weeks of the Giro and then the full Tour de France and then a couple of weeks here, although I've had a little holiday back at home in the middle. And the coverage of all of our Grand Tours is almost over, but there's one more episode to do, which will be a kind of recap of the race and a little bit about what happens in Madrid tomorrow. Fran, maybe you could record us, because I'm not going to Madrid. I'm I'm bailing out and going home. But you're going off to Madrid, aren't you?
Great. So nice of you to abandon me. Yeah. So you didn't complete the Grand Tour after all. You didn't complete the Vuelta.
Well, I'd already missed a few stages in the middle, hadn't I? But no, I'm being sent home for not waiting for you on the climb earlier on today. But perhaps you can record us a little summary of what it's like in Madrid tomorrow evening.
Yeah, and maybe some interviews with some girls that are contending on that challenge, the Vuelta España for women one-day race for the Cycling Podcast Feminin.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk for tomorrow's podcast. Yeah. So, but this is kind of our farewell. I just want to say thanks very much, Fran. It's been fantastic.
Thank you very much, Lionel. I can't believe that you are not going to tell people today about your cachopo you had yesterday night.
Oh, of course, the cachopo.
Don't forget me. Don't forget cachopo. Oh,
I would save the best for last. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was. It's kind of it's hearty, isn't it? It's kind of. It's got that fast food guilt factor, you know, like a really good hamburger. I was really impressed. The steak was very, 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 very lean, very, very soft. You know, the filling was nice, the ham and the cheese, and the breadcrumbs was quite light. It wasn't sort of heavy and greasy. I was expecting it to be really heavy. I didn't eat a whole one to myself because we were kind of sharing, but it was big, but I still think I could have managed it if I'd had to.
Yeah, I mean, the monster challenge is to eat the whole cachopo. Yet, well, you performed it great. I mean, all of us in the table did our best and did our part to get those two cachopos done.
No more cachopo. Well, I'm back in Gijón tonight. You're heading off down to Madrid. Maybe I could go and get myself an extra bonus cachopo this evening.
Bonus cachopo. Great concept.
Well, thank you very much, Fran.
Thank you very much, Lionel.